This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Absolutely gorgeous day in St. Louis, Missouri. It's 72 degrees and sunny for the high today. Fantastic. We almost, Chris Ranji, almost had a shot at challenging Jupiter, Florida for their high temperature today, but we will not get there. Let's go there right now.
Now, a St. Louis Cardinals spring training report, sponsored by St. Louis Composting. Composting, growing gardens and making memories. And by Happy Roof, we always create happy endings on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
That's Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Matt Pauley is covering the Cardinals and spring training in Jupiter, Florida. Hello, Matt.
Hello. How are you guys?
Doing great, buddy. And excited about baseball coming on Saturday, where they actually get to play some games. In fact, they're going to start playing games on Friday in Major League Baseball and the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League. And what's the anticipation there as they start to ramp up for these?
Yeah, I think we've hit that point where everybody's kind of ready for games. You know, it moves quickly. You get excited when pitchers and catchers get here, and then it's like, all right, well, I'm ready for some non-catchers, position players to get involved in stuff. And then they get here, and you're going through the live BPs and everything, and a couple days go by, and it's like, okay, you know what? I'm ready for a game to get started. I think we've hit that point, and luckily we're only a couple days away from a game being played on Saturday. So everybody's ready to see what this is going to look like. There's obviously so many questions about this team, and a lot of those questions won't get answered until the actual season gets started, but we'll start to get a little bit of an idea starting on Saturday.
There are a bunch of phases to spring training. The last one is, okay, I'm ready for this to be over. Let's get the game started. Right now, we're in that middle phase of, I'm ready for the practice to be over. Let's get some games going. So this is really, I mean, this is an exciting time for the sport. Even if you're following a team like the Cardinals that is not expected to win the division and may very well finish near the bottom of the division, it's still baseball, and it is still that marker that spring is coming here.
Yeah, and the Cardinals have a direction finally, a clear direction, and there's some young, exciting players that are going to be part of this thing. So starting to watch that double play combination of J.J. Weatherholt and Mason Wynn and seeing what that's going to end up looking like, seeing whether or not Kyle Leahy can emerge as a starting pitcher, whether or not Victor Scott II can take that next step. Even folks like who we've talked about a lot in Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman. I mean, there's questions about this team, and I personally enjoy watching those questions get answered, especially when they get answered in more of a positive type way.
I used to love when Jen Langosh was writing on MLB.com, and she was down there, we were in those final weeks of spring training, and she would tweet something like, there's a mascot, a beer vendor, and some random person dancing on top of the dugout right now. It's time to go home. we've had enough.
It's time for the opener.
But the opener of the Grapefruit League is always cool. I mean, the sound of John Rooney calling the first pitch is always my favorite line on the radio station really all year. I mean, it's just, it gets us back to where we are supposed to be with baseball every single day, pretty much on the station. And Matthew Liberatore is going to throw that first pitch, Matt. I'm just curious what the buzz is about Matthew as he comes off, I think, a good 2025. What's the anticipation for 26 for him?
I think people are expecting him to take another step forward. That was a key year for him last year, getting his first opportunity to be in every fifth day major league starter. And for the most part, he was able to come through and do a nice job. He had that wall that he kind of hit in the second half of the season. They pumped the brakes on him a little bit, and then he was able to finish strong. He looks really good. It really seems like they are trying to bestow upon him, for lack of a better term, him being the number one guy coming into spring training. I think we were having the discussions, is it going to be Matthew Liberatore or Dustin May as the opening day starter? I don't think that's a conversation anymore. I think they are setting it up for Matthew Liberatore to be the guy. So he'll start the first game of Grapefruit League play, barring something crazy. I think he's going to start opening day, and there's a lot of pressure being put upon him to be the leader of this rotation.
Yeah, barring an injury, I think that's the guy you kind of have to give it to. He's been in the organization. He's had a pretty long road to get to this point. And while Dustin May would be a nice option, too, he's a new guy, right? And I think this is the person you give it to. But talking about Liberatore, Matt, he is a fascinating study because a couple of years ago, you got him in the bullpen. You don't really know what his future is going to be here. And now here he is. Potentially starting on opening day.
Yeah, look, nobody wants the Cardinals to be in the position, other than folks in Cincinnati, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee, nobody wants the Cardinals to be in the position that they're in right now. But that doesn't mean that it's all negative. And what I mean by that is, because of the competitive cycle that they're in and they were in last year, you were able to say, hey, Matthew Liberatore, here's the ball every fifth day. Let's see if you can be a starter in the big leagues. I think they can do the same thing this year with Kyle Leahy. If you go into the year and you're clearly one of the top teams in the National League and you're clearly a World Series contender, it's a lot tougher just to hand the guy the ball every fifth day and see what you have. And it worked out really well with Liberatore last year, and I think he probably will take another step forward. We'll see what happens with Leahy. So it'd be disingenuous to say that there's not some positive things that can happen because of the competitive cycle that you're in.
A year ago, I think we looked at this individual and said he might not be the best hitter on the team right now, but he's going to be. And his approach, just the way that he looked at the plate, and that's Ivan Herrera. And I think you could say right now he is the Cardinals' best hitter. And the anticipation is that very thing. I heard you in one of the reports you left for me this morning drop a little. Herrera's been working in the outfield also, along with some others. I didn't miss that. So tell me, give me kind of the overview. I'm fascinated by Ivan Herrera and what he's doing down there.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. I was going to bring that up because we got a little bit of clarification today from Oliver Marmol on what exactly they were doing. There is not really outfield plans for Herrera at this point. Yesterday was a no-throw day for him, and he is somebody who has a hard time doing nothing. So as opposed to doing nothing, he went and worked with guys in the outfield just kind of on his own doing, just so he would not be doing nothing. So that was the extent of what was going on. But he doesn't have an outfielder's glove. He has a first baseman's mitt. He was using a first baseman's mitt when catching fly balls yesterday in the outfield. Looked fine doing it. But this is something where they still believe in him as a catcher. He's still going through his throwing program. He's not yet really catching. He's not throwing from a crouch. They are still going kind of slowly with him. The expectation is that he's going to be fully ready to go from a defensive standpoint for opening day. And I think they want him to catch a day or two per week if it can work out. And we'll see what it looks like once he gets into Grapefruit League games. But he is taking swings in the cage and during live BPs and looks good. So as of right now, Tom, I mean, we all saw him in the outfield yesterday, but as of right now, that was simply him not wanting to have idle hands.
And Cards in 28 wants to know how he's looking at the plate. Speaking of that, taking some rips.
Yeah, looks good. Looks like a Von Herrera. Nothing really has changed with him. It's really hard. Anybody who tries to evaluate guys based off what's going on during batting practice, you know, like Jordan Walker looks awesome, but you know what he hasn't seen? A low and away slider. Mm-hmm. So let's see what it looks like once Grapefruit League games play. But there is, it looks good. It looks good for just about everybody right now.
And speaking of the catching position, while Herrera is probably going to get some reps, I mean, we expect a continuation, Pajes getting most of them this season behind the plate.
I don't know. I think Jimmy Crooks could play his way into a more prominent role behind the plate, depending on what happens here. I think everything is kind of on the table. It all starts with, can Ivan Herrera be a guy who you can start back there a couple days, and then I think you work backwards from that. But I think this is a really key year for Jimmy Crooks. I've said this a few times, so I'm sorry for repeating myself, but you've got Leonardo Bernal, who's a year away. You've got Renato Rodriguez, who may be 2 years away. Jimmy Crooks is still a top-level prospect in this organization. He is somebody who's hit at every single level he's been at. This is your opportunity to find out exactly who he is as a Major League Baseball player, and that requires him not just catching one out of every 3 days or two out of every 4 days. Like, you need to get him back there. So I think we kind of know who Pedro Páez is. I think there's a little bit more offensive growth that you can get from him, but not a lot. This is, if you don't know who Jimmy Crooks is at the end of this season, well, then we're sitting here right at this exact same time next year talking about Leonardo Bernal pushing for a major league job, and there's still questions about Crooks. So I guess I don't know if I'm just trying to like speak it into existence, but I'm really hopeful that Crooks plays a lot this year.
The Pozos dropped some LBs. I noticed that at the Baseball Writers Dinner. There's no question. What do you think his role is at this moment? Where does he fit in all this?
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, he's at AAA and he's a veteran mentor to Leonardo Bernal, just as he was supposed to be last year for Jimmy Crooks at AAA. He is obviously somebody who you can trust at the big league level. He is, if something happens where a guy gets injured or maybe they trade somebody, you don't have to worry about what you have. But I would think the best possible scenario for the Cardinals is one where Joel Pozo is at AAA.
Is there anything else of note that we need to know about down in Florida today?
Riley O'Brien, still no update on him. That was asked about today. He's got that the calf issue, and time is of the essence on this thing because they got to figure out whether or not he's going to be able to participate in the World Baseball Classic. So hopefully we have an answer on that in the next day or two. Hunter Dobbins is going to get a reevaluation of his knee thing, and so he's leaving camp, and he's going to be leaving the state of Florida to go meet with a doctor, and then depending on what the doctor says, Dobbins might be able to. He's good to throw right now. It's just the lower body that he can't go cover first base or anything like that. So he's a little bit slower getting things underway, but we should have more of an answer on Dobbins in the next couple days too. So those are the two probably major storylines coming out of today's conversations.
And one last thing, I know that we did bring it up to you yesterday, but now we have more clarification about what's happening with the players union and Tony Clark, who resigned because he was having an affair with his brother's wife, and now looking like Bruce Meyer is going to be the negotiator. I know that neither guy was really that popular with the players. Has there been any discussion about that today, now that we know more about what's going on?
Yeah, they started things for us an hour later today in the clubhouse, and I was told, I don't have this confirmed, but I was told by a couple people that the reason for that was there was an update being given on what was going on with the Players Association, so the players had to get together and talk through some things, and that delayed some stuff today. It's, you know, from a media standpoint, it's the talk of everybody, and what is this going to look like moving forward? A lot of people feel like the PA needs to keep Meyer in the role that he is in right now and bring somebody else in to be the figurehead and be the, you know, the face and the voice. There's just, Meyer doesn't get along, and not that you have to, but yeah, as much as Tony Clark may have been disliked, he was respected, and I just don't get, I don't know if that same dynamic is there with Bruce Meyer. You know, the players met with Meyer for 90 minutes today, that subcommittee did, and some of the reps, and then there's supposed to be another conversation coming up in the next few hours, and that could result in an appointment of who's going to be the interim lead. But this is, everybody agrees that this is terrible. I'm not trying to overstate things, but this is a seminal moment for our game, for Major League Baseball, coming up on this negotiation. This is one of the biggest negotiations that we've had in a long time, and a lot of things are going to be set moving forward. And the fact that this is happening right now, what, 8-9 months away from the CBA expiring, it's just not a good situation.
No, you aren't lying. I mean, this took a turn that nobody anticipated.
This guy.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
Fire Tony Clark into the sun.
My goodness. Matt Pauly, appreciate you. Thank you for the visit down in Jupiter, and let's catch up and keep you updated, everyone. 5 o'clock, Redbird Rush Hour. Jen Cease is going to control 6 to 8 tonight with a city spotlight from the Foundry on St. Louis City SC. So we appreciate all that soccer coverage, and enjoy the rest of your day, Matt. Thank you for it.
You bet. Thanks for having me, as always.
Always great to visit with Matt Pauly on the Gas House Gang. We're that much closer to Cardinal baseball games being played. How about Canada? They just beat the Czechs 4-3 in overtime.
I can't believe it.
Jordan
men's hockey.
Binnington, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. He stops a breakaway to end regulation. He makes a monster save in overtime, and then Mitch Marner with the winner in overtime. They trailed twice in this game, and Canada wins it 4-3 to advance out of the quarterfinals. Wow.
They're about to lose, man.
The that favorites. Wow. We'll talk about that in just a moment, and also the Billikens loss yesterday to Rhode Island. We were worried about that one a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that they've been playing and the fact that Rhode Island beat Dayton, Rhode Island beat George Mason. I mean, you had to favor the Billikens in every game moving forward, but they'd been playing with fire. We'll talk about it in just a bit.
The crowd rushes the floor. They rush the floor as they knock off the 18th team in the country on their home floor in front of a big crowd. 81-76, the final.
That's how it ended on KMOX last night. St. Louis University drops one at Rhode Island. Final score, as Rammer said there, 81-76. Billikens never could get control of this game. They were behind basically from the beginning of the game and did the same thing, Ronj, that they always seem to do, which is start slow. And they always seem to capture things in the second half. And they turn it on. They blow you out with three-pointers. A barrage did not come this time. It came actually from Rhode Island, where they were bombing threes. They basically beat SLU at SLU's own game.
Yeah, this is the thing that Josh Schertz has been warning against, that you can't continually start slow and then hope to come back and win. You can go to that well a few times, but eventually you're going to get bitten by it, and they got bitten by it last night. And I know that people are going to be concerned about the rankings. We'll see what the AP is on Monday, but they still have the game this weekend against VCU at home, so that's happening on Friday. A win there could alleviate that quite a bit. They drop in the net by a few spots. Now they're down to 22. They are in the KenPom rankings. I think they went down to about 24 or 5. They're somewhere in that range. So they're still at a respectable number, but they can't really afford a whole lot more missteps here. And we talked about this a lot, that I think if they finish the regular season with a couple of losses and maybe they get to the conference tournament and they drop one, or they don't win the whole thing, hopefully they'll win at least one. But I don't know that they... If they lose one more regular season game, I don't know that they have to win the conference tournament to get in. They may not get a good seed, but they still, I think, have put together a good enough resume with three losses to get in. That could be totally wrong, and maybe that's optimistic, but that's how I see it. Can we talk about Rhode Island's half-assed court storming last night? What are we doing? What are we doing? It's like 20 people ran onto the floor like, should we go out there? We beat a top 25. Yeah, maybe we should go out there. What are we doing, man? Just stay in the seats. Stay in the seats.
You know, just let them have fun. Whatever.
Nah, screw that fun.
Yeah.
They should be embarrassed.
Hey, they earned the game. They won the game. Yeah, I mean, they beat them.
But, Tom, they should be embarrassed, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's, I mean, right. They beat the mighty St. Louis University, 18th ranked team in the country. It's been running everybody. I mean, it's exciting. You know, I mean, SLU is a good team. SLU is still the best team in the A-10 on a neutral floor. And I do think that in the A-10 tournament, they would be disappointed if they didn't win the tournament. But there are some great teams out there. And one of them's coming in Friday. You brought it up. And I think it could work both ways. I think if you lose to VCU, and VCU's already been knocked off by SLU once, they are going to try to get revenge, and they are going to bring it on Friday. It is going to be a very, very good and intense basketball game. But if you win it, I think you're right back on track to where you were.
6 o'clock game on Friday. We have it here on KMOX. I was a little concerned, and I said before last night that I was most concerned about that Dayton game on the road, because you folded them up when they were here, and then they're going to be playing in their building on Tuesday. You know, SLU has to go to their building and play on Tuesday. I thought they'd be pretty fired up for that one. I kind of thought they'd take care of business last night.
Yeah, so. I mean, Josh Schertz said it best. They've been playing with fire. We've talked about it the entire month. They have not played a complete game since they beat Dayton here.
Maybe it's a wake-up call.
It is absolutely. Hopefully. You can't get away with it over and over and over again. Eventually, it's going to come back to get you. And that's what happened. And so Archie Miller and the Rhode Island Rams get the job done, and now you get you're off your feet today. You watch the film. Tomorrow, practice. Get ready for VCU. And Friday night, that place will be rocking. But you got to get it done. Got to get it done. And don't worry about being in St. Louis for the NCAA tournament or not. Just get to the NCAA tournament and do damage. I mean, I'd love it. Would have been great had they been here. But I said they had to run the table to assure themselves of a spot in St. Louis. It's not out of the question, but I just want them to be in the tournament. All right. I just want them to be playing well in March. That's all I care about. And that is absolutely attainable. So
just get in.
Get in. Learn your lessons.
No one's going to want to play him if they do get in.
No, but learn the lesson from last night and move forward. They almost pulled it off last night, and Josh Schertz said, had we wouldn't have deserved it.
Yep.
Back after this, we have some college football to talk about with two of your favorites, if you're a Mizzou fan, no question, Brady Cook, Cody Schrader. With Chris Ronji, I'm Tom Ackerman. This is the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Darn right it was a good run. Every run was powerful from Cody Schrader. I remember that incredible game against Tennessee in which I think they carried him off the field on their shoulders. I mean, it was just amazing to be there for that. And then, of course, Brady Cook just win after win after win, including that memorable going to the hospital and coming back to play against Auburn. Just an awesome pair that we're really proud to say are from this area. And joining us are Brady Cook and Cody Schrader, two of the great Missouri Tigers on the Gas House Gang. With Chris Ronji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Great highlights there, fed by Matt Pajeski. How are you gentlemen doing?
Oh, we're doing well, man. Thanks for having us on today.
It's great to be with you.
I'm doing really well.
I remember both of you, by the way, being up on the podium and presenting you at the Missouri Athletic Club and the reception that you both received. Let me start with you, Cody, because I believe you went before Brady did, and it was a special, special time to see you honored in that way back in your hometown.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment. You know, I didn't really know much, you know, about that award until, you know, I was going to be awarded it. But, yeah, it was an awesome moment to come back to St. Louis. And kind of see, like you said, just the celebration of all the Missouri athletes and the history of Missouri and just St. Louis athletes in general.
Cody,
and it's an honor that I'll remember, and it's something that me and Brady talk about consistently.
Oh, I bet, Cody. And it was an honor to see you receive it. And then, Brady, I know that there were a lot of people buzzing about you as well after that, saying, you know, I'll be watching his football career, but I want to hire that guy.
You know, I took that event very seriously because there's a lot of people in St. Louis, a lot of faces that were there, people that I've heard of, seen, watched on TV. I remember I sat next to Jeremy Maclin that night. So it was a night to remember, and they put on a really, really good event there.
And we'll stick with you here, Brady, on this, and then actually get both of your thoughts on it. But we'll start with you. This Missouri Tigers team under Eli Drinkwitz has provided a lot of real enjoyment for people. And it's been a lot of fun to watch this program. Since you both have been out, I mean, what are your thoughts on what the Missouri Tigers have done on the football side?
Well, me and Cody actually talked to Coach Drink yesterday on the phone for about 10 minutes. And, I mean, it's just amazing how much the landscape has changed. I mean, he has 39 new players on the team. Mm-hmm. That's obviously something me and Cody did not see in our time in college. And, you know, just a simple part of just remembering names in the offseason. I mean, I couldn't imagine. So obviously a lot of new faces, a lot of new guys. Is going to be a complete new makeup of that team. But as long as Drink's the head coach, he's going to have a quarterback this year. They have a room. They have running backs. They have pieces, you know, and I think they'll be able to put it together and put something together this year.
I grew up a Mizzou fan. My dad went to Mizzou. I went to tailgates back in the 80s and watched this team grow, covered Gary Pinkel, and saw him get close. I went to school in Indiana and saw the Hoosiers win this championship this past year, and I had a lot of Mizzou fans saying, well, why can't we do that? And I said, you can do that. And do you feel that way, guys? I mean, when you see what Indiana did, does that give a lot of programs hope that they can win a national championship, that it's no longer the Ohio States and the Georgias and et cetera. You can do this.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think it's just navigating this landscape of college football and getting the right guys in the building. You know, what I've kind of seen and heard from the stories about Indiana's program and Kirk Cignetti and those guys, I think he has the right guys in the building. And after talking to Drink yesterday, I think he feels very, very strong about the guys that he brought in, the guys that he was able to retain, the new coaches, the new offensive coordinator. You know, got some really good pieces, got the right guys in the building. And I know Ryan Russell's the head strength coach over there. And I think that's where it starts. And so that's the things they're in right now. So as long as they continue just to build and continue to just be a team, even though, you know, guys are leaving, guys, you know, might be there for spring, might not be there in the fall. If you can have those core guys that are setting the example, setting the stage every single day when you walk into the weight room and the meeting room, all of that stuff, I think they're going to be in good hands.
Yeah, and guys, you both kind of talked about this a little bit, what Eli and coaches around the sport have to deal with in terms of all the transfers and having to replace so many players on the team. And it's not something that the two of you really got to experience firsthand. I mean, what do you think is the way around this, where players can still have some say in their futures, but it's not so chaotic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough thing to balance. You know, the thing that comes to my mind is just going back to this Indiana team from this past year. You know, you take Fernando Mendoza out of it. There's only a handful of guys that, you know, me, you, and Cody could probably name off the top of our head right now. And it really went back to Kurt bringing in the right guys. It might not be the most hype or the most stars or the guy that started Ohio State out of high school, but it's going to be guys that have buy-in for Mizzou and want to play for Mizzou. And I think that's what Indiana did this past year, and that's what Coach Drink is doing right now. He's trying to find guys, regardless of you know, how many stars they had coming out or where they played before this. He's trying to find guys that want to play for Mizzou. And those are the guys that are going to have success long term. So that's kind of my take on it.
I want to talk to you guys about this camp that you're going to be holding on June 27th, because here you are again giving back to St. Louis, and I could see the two of you being a part of this community for years and years. It's called the Cook Schrader Legacy Camp. It's on June 27th at Chaminade. It's for boys and girls age 6 to 16. Let's start with either of you. I guess we'll start with Brady, since it's at your alma mater there. What was the genesis of this? How did this come about?
Well, you know, it's something me and Cody have talked about for a long time. And there's no better way to give back to a community than doing a youth camp. And the way we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. We're building it up completely by ourselves. You know, we're building out our entire staff of people that have made a difference in our football life, and different coaches that have made an impact to us. And they're going to be there helping out. And at the end of the day, this is to give back, not only to teach football skills, but to teach life skills. And give these, you know, boys and girls a day to remember, you know, a day to look forward to, and then a day to remember. So that's our plan, and we're looking forward to it.
Cody, as Brady said, this is a camp to help kids, you know, learn the game and learn teamwork and all of that. For football, for you, having grown up in St. Louis and playing this sport here, and then going to Mizzou and playing it there, what is the most valuable lesson you think you've taken away from football and that you can impart to these kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, it's the brotherhood, it's the teamwork. But what I think I get the most out of football is learning how to be a consistent, not only football player, but to be a consistent human being and to be a consistent son or a consistent daughter. I think that's what football has taught me, because that's, you know, we're talking about Indiana and like different five stars and all that. Like, I can relate, you know, I would probably fit in very well in the culture of like Indiana, because there's those guys that just come up, have been counted out, that started at smaller schools and have been brought up. But consistency is what's got them to win a national championship. Consistency is what built their team culture and built their identity on who they want to be as a football team. And I think that's my mindset with this camp, is like, I just want to be able to preach to guys, like, and girls that you don't have to be the biggest, fastest, strongest, X, Y, and Z, whatever, you know, people, you know, think that you need to be to make it. You just got to be the most consistent player. You got to be the most consistent teammate. You got to be the most consistent person in the building every single day. And then that's what's going to keep you around, and that's what's going to eventually get you the opportunity to, you know, get a shot on the field. And then it's up to you once you get that opportunity. But, yeah, so for me, man, like, football has taught me consistency. And I think that's what we want to show these kids at these camps. That's going to be one of my biggest messages to kids on how I did it, what I think the kind of, the formula to success is. And yeah, I'm excited and can't be more excited to get going on this camp.
Yeah, for both of you, you had to earn it not only to get to Mizzou, but at Mizzou. I mean, Schrader was in the locker room trying to elevate among the running backs. Cook was highly thought of, but I know that both of you had to fight through a lot of things, probably had to remain at how, I guess my question is, starting with Cody and then Brady follow, if you would, how did you stay laser focused on the task at hand with all of those outside things going on and trying to, you know, permeate what you were trying to do there?
Yeah, no, for me, it's like I never saw any, like even when I was playing at Truman State, like football was, like I always believed that I was going to go to the NFL. Like there was never like, oh, I need to like do something else. Like it was just like, I'm going to play 4 years in college and I'm going to go give it a shot in the NFL and like I'm going to make it in the NFL. Like, so I just have trained, I think it's really got to be specific on how you talk to yourself. Like everyone talks about positive reinforcement and how you talk to yourself. And I'm a true believer in that. Like, you have to tell yourself that you're going to make it, because if you don't believe it, why should anyone else believe it? And I think when you have all the outside noise and you're stacked and you're eighth on the depth chart, you're a walk-on, you're a Division II running back trying to go to improve yourself at an SEC school, you have to believe it. And I've always had the highest self-belief in myself. And even when I got to Mizzou and now I got a shot in the NFL, like, I always – I write goals down every single day, and like I just constantly remind myself, and I don't make them too long. I have three specific goals, and I just continually just remind myself of that daily.
I think the word that comes to mind for me is conviction. During my time at Mizzou, and even before my time at Mizzou, I was truly convicted that I was going to start at quarterback for Missouri, and we were going to win football games. And I think back to my first year as a starter in 2022. I earned the job, but it was one of the toughest years of my life, and we won six games, and it just, nothing could go right. But I still had that conviction. And along with Cody that offseason, we were convicted, man, and we came back, and we had one of the best seasons in Mizzou history. And I think it all comes back to conviction. I mean, if you're convicted in something that you truly believe in and you're passionate about, and for me it was Mizzou football, and it was playing quarterback for Mizzou football. And obviously now that's shifted. And now this is my career, and it's my professional job, and I play for the New York Jets. But the one thing I always had and never wavered was conviction.
Brady, I asked this question not because I'm a Bears fan, but it is because of that. How about your teammate, your old teammate Luther Burden, the way he's been playing? He looks great.
Well, I mean, it's impressive. I think Ben Johnson and that staff fit him perfectly. That's what I tell people. I can tell just by watching Luther on tape, the way he blocks, the way he runs routes, the way he's detailed pre-snap. And then obviously, he's Luther. When he has the ball in his hands, that is Luther Burden III. And he is going to do crazy things with it. But I'm so proud of him. We caught up last week, and I can tell Chicago is the right fit for him.
And Cody, one of the best running backs I've ever seen. The way that you attacked every single time you carried that football was just a joy. And I'm certain that you've made an impression no matter where you've gone, whether it's been the 49ers or the Rams or the Jags or the Texans or the Broncos or wherever the NFL, and for that matter, Brady as well. Whatever challenge is ahead of you, you're ready to attack it.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head. Yeah, it's been a wild, especially this last past year. I was on four teams in 1 month, kind of really got to see the business side of the NFL on – kind of how the roster shakes out on a week-to-week basis, and it really is a week-to-week league, especially, a guy like me that's a undrafted guy that's got to continually prove themselves. But I've also been blessed. I got two credited NFL seasons. I've been on an active roster for the past 2 years. Been very blessed. Haven't got my, real opportunity to get to play in a game yet. I got a little bit with the Rams last year when we went to the wild card and divisional round. You know, got to play some special teams. I got a taste. Had a decent preseason. And then, yeah, just continually just trying to make my mark and waiting for my opportunity. And I think the cool part is I kind of understand the blueprint because it's very similar to how my transition went from Truman State to Mizzou. It might not be the first year. It might not be your second year. But maybe it's that third year where you get a real op. And it's up to you. And you got to, like I said, you got to stay consistent in your process. Like, I still watch film as I'm going to start. I still practice as I'm going to start. My process doesn't change. Like, I'm process-oriented over goal-oriented and success-oriented. So, yeah, just continually punching the clock every single day, staying detailed, staying, you know, up on my craft. And they could call me today and be like, hey, we need you tomorrow, and I'll be ready. Because that's my constant. That's my mindset. That's my process. And, yeah, just continually excited and extremely blessed to be in the position that I am.
Last thing for both of you. Cody, we'll start with you. Then, Brady, you can follow up. Do you each have a good welcome to the NFL moment?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, man, it was the first time I walked into the 49ers building. I mean, when you see Trent Williams, you see McCaffrey, you see George Kittle, you see Nick Bosa, you see Fred Warner, like, you see these, like, superstars, Hall of Famers. But the one thing that does come to mind, my second preseason game, I got to start with the 49ers starters, Brock Purdy, you know, Debo, a lot of those guys. We ran a toss crack to the left. Chase Young on the Saints, you know, was playing their right DN, and he was just unblocked. We were supposed to have a crack block on him. I get the ball. He is, and he's like 6'6", 260, like muscle, like he can run like a 4.4. And I get the ball. I see him. I'm like, oh, no. So I just go straight to the sideline and just try to, like, turn the corner and get out of bounds. But, yeah, getting chased by him was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I'd say I had a few this year. Obviously, the opportunity to play in five games, start four. You know, I think about that first game versus Miami. Tyrod goes down the second series, and, you know, Coach Glenn came up to me and said, hey, you're up, get ready. And, you know, it was that moment where all the nerves, all the anxiety went away. And I do remember, I'd say my welcome to the NFL moment was my second series on a play action. I stepped up, and before I could even blink, the ball was on the ground. It was a strip sack, and it felt, I mean, unbelievable, the amount of force that a DN had on this strip sack, striking down the ball. It's nothing I've felt before, even at the highest levels in college. And I just remember, you know, obviously the ball's on the ground, I'm on the ground, I look up, and I just feel helpless. And I'd say that was my welcome to the NFL moment. Oh,
wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely different.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I can't wait to hear how this goes for you. And I know a lot of those stories will be told at the Cook Schrader Legacy Camp. It's going to be June 27th at Chaminade. Boys and girls age 6 to 16, go to cookschradercamp.com. cookschradercamp.com, and be at this great camp, which is going to be from 9 to 2 that day, run by two of the great Missouri Tigers ever. We appreciate you being with us on the Gas House Gang.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
That's awesome.
How about
love
that, Tom?
Love it.
You get the ball for the first time, and you look up, and there's Chase Young, and you say, nope, I'm going to the sideline. I will see you later.
Oh, man. Those guys.
Awesome.
Those guys could play, man. And they still can. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll wrap up the show in just a moment. That's fun. I love talking Mizzou football and beyond. With Chris Raji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Back in a moment on the Gas House Gang.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Brian Walton of the Cardinal Nation, who covers the minor leagues covers all through the Cardinals minor leagues, is reporting that pitcher Brandon Clark, the one they got in the Sonny Gray trade, is expected to be out until June, continuation of a concerning injury history for the 22-year-old top prospect. So we'll get into that. We'll do a little research. But that is Brian Walton, who is first reporting that. Great to visit with Cody Schrader, Brady Cook, Matt Pauly, of course, for Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Pal, have a great day.
See you, buddy. Back tomorrow with Bernie.
Yes.
At 12.
I'll be listening. Take care.